Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
What a week.
We reiterate our hope for improved relations with the people of North Korea.
Pakistan has demanded an apology, but the U.S. is not offering one.
We are paying a very heavy price in Baghdad. I'm deeply disturbed about events, but not surprised.
Vote on it, pass it, and we can move on to discussing a solution for the year-long extension.
It's been a busy week as we lead up to the end of the year. North Korea, we've got Pakistan, the payroll tax extension, Iraq. That's the sounds of some of the top stories of the past 7 days. Not all that happened this week, but joining us, that isn't all that happened this week, I should say. Joining us now, our panel of bright minds who are bright even at this time of the morning. Jeff Yang writes the Dow Jones column for the Wall Street Journal and blogs for our co-producer, WNYC's It's a Free Country. Farai Chidea, journalist and blogger at Farai.com, joining us by Skype. And Ron Christie, Republican political strategist, CEO of Christie Strategies, former special assistant to President George W. Bush. And we actually dragged him into the studio today. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's begin with... Let's start with kind of an off-news topic, which is the Colbert Super PAC. And Farai, I wanted to bring this up with you because I'm not sure whether Colbert is joking here or this is like one of the most kind of witty satires of the political system we've seen. Is he trying to really influence elections here?
Well, you know, there was a change in the law where political parties used to pay for their own primaries, and those were rolled back over time, including in South Carolina. I think that the part of his super PAC, which is a total joke, was that he wanted to rename the event for the Colbert Nation super PAC.
He wanted to rename the primary.
Right. So that part's a joke.
Right. But what about the part where he wanted to get the referendum on corporations are people or only people are people? He wasn't kidding.
He is not kidding. He's trying to get a referendum related to Citizens United, a ruling that has totally changed how transparent or rather how the lack of transparency affects elections. I mean, there's so little transparency in where money comes from. I mean, it is, I think, completely insane and very regressive. And Colbert is just going for it, and good for him.
Well, Ron, yeah, let me have you jump in on this, Ron, because this is something which appears to be bipartisan. He got support for putting this referendum for both the GOP and the Democrats.
Well, I think, Celeste, it speaks to the fact that there are people who do not believe their voices are being heard in Washington, that Republicans and Democrats are not responsive. And if not the legitimate need for a third party, then a third alternative, a way of saying, I'm tired of this. I want really more responsive government and leadership. So it doesn't surprise me at all. And Colbert, you see Jon Stewart. I think a lot of the younger people now are getting their news and their political information from late night comedy
shows. Funny or Die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's just a different medium that perhaps in the last 10 years has really been a rise of how the younger generation is getting their news.
Okay. You're about to jump in, Jeff.
Well, I mean, I can say for sure that if Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart were to run on a third party line, they'd probably get a significant number of votes. Sadly, probably at the expense mostly of the president. But, that said, I think that it is truly brilliant. And I'm not sure that there is anymore a dividing line between satire and actual, attempts to change the political system. It's like the only leverage left to try to change things. And Colbert is going ahead with other things as well. I mean, I think he just recently announced that he's going to field his own presidential debate for the Republican candidates.
He has the money, yeah.
Yeah, he certainly does.
Stephen Colbert.
Super serious, something like that. The super serious
debate. Well, really classy Republican
debate. Yeah, there you go. In South Carolina, which is his home state.
Yep.
Which actually might get more participants than...
Donald Trump?
Than Donald Trump.
For example.
At least Ron Christie said that. Well, let's move on to a really more serious topic. And this is one that also has gotten a lot of, not just coverage, but I guess really heartfelt response. And it's the death of Danny Chin. We've had 8 soldiers who were charged in the death of Danny Chin, a GI. And his story is very sad. He claimed he was the victim of systematic hazing Before he died, he was pelted with rocks. He was forced to crawl across the floor. He had to do mm-hmm. pull-ups with his mouth full of water. They shouted out racial insults to him. Jeff, this has to be a subject that's kind of sore for you.
Yeah, I mean, and it should be sore for I think anybody who has
19 years old
has been 19 years old, but also, you know, anybody who's an immigrant or a child of immigrants and recognizes that of the various things one can do to truly embrace the notion of being American. I mean, there really are only two acts that can kind of overtly express Americanness. You know, one is naturalization, if you're an immigrant, to become an American citizen. And the second is, if you are an American citizen, to actually go and put your life, your body, yourself on the line for your country. And to have a situation where somebody who has chosen to do so, whose parents are Chinatown residents here in New York, don't speak English, came from China, one of their only two sons.
He, however, was born in.
He was born here, yes. But, you know, he made this decision to go serve his country and to face then insults related to his race and nationality, you know, being told things like, you know, well, maybe you should just go back where you came from, things like that. That, I can see how that would be about as horrific as one can imagine in a war zone fighting for your country.
Going back to where you came from, which would be Manhattan.
Yeah.
Right. But it's despicable. I mean, he's young enough to go over to Afghanistan to serve his country, to wear the uniform, but not old enough to drink. And yet people are going to haze him. People are going to insult him based on his outside appearance for his ethnicity. We're Americans. The reason that we're Americans is that we are individual citizens who are bound together by our common heritage and our history as Americans. And to single him out based on race is deplorable, particularly in the United States military. I hope these folks are swiftly brought to justice under the Uniform Code of Military Justice and that we see a sad closure to this very sad story.
Yeah, justice certainly won't bring him back to his parents. So far, we're batting 1,000 here. We've gotten bipartisan support for all of these things. Let's move on to something which may break that. That's the settlement, the largest residential fair lending settlement in history. I want to make sure I got that correct. Bank of America has agreed to pay $335 million to settle allegations that its countrywide financial unit discriminated against Black and Hispanic borrowers during the housing boom. I'm reading that carefully from the New York Times article to make sure I get it correct. Farai, is this justice, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a move in the right direction, but it certainly doesn't address the question of if you were someone. There were two facets to this ruling. One facet was people who were charged more for loans. The other facet were people who were steered to subprime loans, which could then affect your ability to pay off your house note. So if you then went into default because you could have gotten a regular loan, but you got a subprime loan, who's going to give you your house back? You know, there's a whole other level of ruination that follows this. And it really also brings up the racial aspects of some of the political talk that said, oh, it's those Blacks and Latinos tearing down the economy. Yeah. Well, let's try again. You know, let's reboot that conversation, because there was talk that, you know, Blacks and Latinos with subprime loans were bringing down the economy. A lot of those folks didn't even need to have subprime loans. And what redress will they have?
I mean, you know, beyond that, it's like all the discussion about, you know, how Freddie and Fannie and the push to get, you know, minority homeowners into the system, so to speak, was what took down the system. I mean, the reality is this. There were people who were walking into situations where they were either ignorant of the consequences or literally fooled, literally tricked into taking on circumstances, financially speaking, that they could not handle. And the fact that there have not been more or really any criminal charges being levied against people who conducted this scam on a nationwide
scale. That's what I wonder. I don't know if a penalty is enough.
Well, and, you know, and it's not that I would necessarily say that I believe in predatory lending until you find out that it's your own parents that they approached my folks and said, oh, you need to take a subprime and don't worry about it and this. And, you know, my brother and I are both recovering lawyers. And my parents said, you know, what do you think? And this is what they said. And we're like, no, these guys are trying to scam you. So I do think it's legitimate. I do think it's real, if only for having dealt with my own folks. And imagine how many other people around this country have had to deal with that, where they thought, oh, they're a banker or they're in the housing market, I must trust them.
All right. I'm going to give you my guilty pleasure, which is, of course, Jim Sensenbrenner now saying, Representative Jim Sensenbrenner, Sensenbrenner saying he needs to apologize for having said in private in a phone conversation that Michelle Obama, the first lady, has a large posterior. And let's get a takeaway here. Ron, is there an apology here?
Of course. I mean, I've worked on the Hill for 8 years, and he's always had a rather acerbic mouth, and he's been kind of an idiot. And I think this counts as being an idiot. You can say what you want about the First Lady of the United States, but you don't insult them personally.
Jeff?
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, she is the classiest and most, justifiably beloved First Lady we've had in many generations. And, you know, to especially criticize somebody based on physical attributes.
Especially Jim Sensenbrenner.
Especially
Come
Jim
on.
Sensenbrenner.
Fry quickly. Last word for you.
All right, Jim, I'm going to challenge you to a push-up off.
Jeff Yang writes the Dow Jones columns for the Wall Street Journal, blogs for our co-producers, WNYC's It's a Free Country, Fry Today, a journalist and blogger at Fry.com, and Ron Christie, Republican political strategist, CEO of Christie Strategies. There's your week. I'm Celeste Headley, and this is The Takeaway. Happy holidays.